Hi, everyone. The Securities and Exchange Commission has finally issued its final rules on climate disclosure, and it's not what everyone expected. I'm your host, Bill Coffin, and this is the Ethicast. After 2 years and more than 24,000 comments from companies, legislators, and trade groups, the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission has finally approved the enhancement and standardization of climate-related disclosures for investors, its long-anticipated rules that require certain SEC registrants to report their carbon emissions and climate risks. The rules passed 3-2 along party lines, Democrats for, Republicans against. The rules jettisoned a provision that would have required companies to report their Scope 3 carbon emissions, that is, emissions from within their supply chain, after receiving strong pushback that such a requirement would be overwhelming to companies and impossible to implement. The rules also scale back requirements on Scope 1 and 2 direct and indirect emissions, stating that companies will only have to disclose what they consider to be material emissions. Even so, the rules will face immediate legal challenge, something the SEC has expected. West Virginia Attorney General Patrick Morrisey announced that 10 states were filing a challenge to the rule, and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is likely to follow, since it is already challenging a similar rule that California has in place. Joining us to offer her expert view on these final rules and their implications for those companies that will have to abide by them is Ethisphere's Chief Strategy Officer and Executive Chair, Erica Salmon Byrne. Erica, as always, thank you for joining us. I'm really grateful to have you on the show for these kinds of episodes because you provide a lot of clarity on what are some fairly complex issues.
Well, thank you, Bill. I will certainly do my best for this one. I will say I am not fully through the 888 pages that the SEC produced. So this will be potentially the first of many conversations as we really all come to understand what it will be like to live under these rules.
Well, I can tell you from personal experience, some years ago when I covered the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, I actually printed out the whole thing and read it cover to cover. And I realized it was so thick, I actually did some research and learned that that printout literally would have stopped a low caliber bullet, right? It was thick enough to stop a bullet. So, and that wasn't even as long as this one is. This is probably the longest piece of rules making I've ever seen. So it's pretty titanic. But before we get started, I would like to read from the SEC's own fact sheet for the final rules, just that so there's no confusion over what they contain. Okay. And it says the following, quote, "The final rules require a registrant to disclose, among other things, material climate-related risks, activities to mitigate or adapt to such risks, information about the registrant's board of directors' oversight of climate-related risks and management's role in managing material climate-related risks, and information on any climate-related targets or goals that are material to the registrant's business, results of operations, or financial condition. Further, to facilitate investors' assessment of certain climate-related risks, the final rules require disclosure of Scope 1 and/or Scope 2 greenhouse gas emissions on a phased-in basis by certain larger registrants when those emissions are material, the filing of an attestation report covering the required disclosure of such registrants' Scope 1 and/or Scope 2 emissions, also on a phased-in basis, and disclosure of the financial statement effects of severe weather events and other natural conditions, including, for example, costs and losses. The final rules include a phased-in compliance period for all registrants, with the compliance date dependent on the registrant's filer status and the content of the disclosure," end quote. So, with all that out of the way, Erica, what is your takeaway from how the SEC walked back the requirement for climate risk disclosure into company supply chains?
Yeah, so the word, Bill, and I was counting there, and I think the word count was 7 mentions of material, right? Yeah. I want to take a moment to ground everyone in the why of this in the first place. And it's in that word material, right? So if you think about what the SEC is charged with doing, the SEC's key stakeholder is investors, right? It's people who are putting their money into an organization, and they are doing their best based on the information that organization gives them to decide whether or not that is a good use of their money, right? And that's the case whether you are a retail trader, trading on an app, or you are a multi-billion dollar pension fund. right? Exact same analysis, like, is this a good place for me to put my money? What the SEC is doing with this rule is they are saying there are things that impact a business that are material to the operations of that business that are not uniformly being disclosed today, and they need to be, right? So they are trying to bring some consistency to the disclosure landscape. They are trying to provide investors with the information they need to be able to realistically identify riskier companies because of their exposure to things that maybe don't show up in a quarterly financial statement right now. So that's, I think, part of why they pulled the scope three back, because the analysis of materiality in the scope three, on the scope three emissions, is challenging, right? It's challenging even if you feel like your data is in great shape. If, on the other hand, you are one of the many businesses out there that can't actually even tell you in a single list who all their suppliers are, scope becomes a nightmare. So from a data cleanliness perspective, we've got a long way to go before we are able to do scope three well. And I think the SEC did a good job here of focusing in first on the information that investors are going to need to know from the companies that they are evaluating, which is what is inside that company's full control.
I really love your analysis there. And it just reminded me of, yes, how many companies there are that don't even have a full list of their third parties, let alone insight into their emissions. Given the state of things, what kind of time frame can you imagine where our general business environment will get to a part where we can ask that of companies and they can actually realistically, you know, deliver on that?
I think it's a long way off, Bill. I do. I think it's a long way off. I mean, I think, look, the materiality analysis is obviously something that the SEC is using in the context of, you know, the filing environment, right? The listing environment. But materiality is something that every business should be thinking about, right? What are the things that are material to my business? What are the things that I need to care about as inside of my organization? So I don't think the fact that scope three is not part of the SEC's rule is somehow going to stop companies from thinking about whether climate disclosure and climate risk is material to their business. Every good business should be doing that today, right? They're, without question. I think we are a long way off from seeing filing disclosures around scope three because of the data challenges, because of, you know, there are nearer term better reasons for companies to know who their supply chain consists of than the scope three side of it, right? There's anti-corruption risk in your supply chain. There's human trafficking risk in your supply chain. You know, there's data risk in your supply chain. There's so much risk in your supply chain, and so much of it is so material that companies are running at those risks. And I think, you know, if they can get there for those risks, maybe then we can get there for scope three. But we're from the companies that I talk to every day, we're a long way off.
Yeah. This is a potentially sensitive question, but when we finally get to that level of data hygiene, where we actually get there, what do you think will be able to claim the greater share of credit for us getting there? Regulatory onus or voluntary adherence to what is considered best practice?
I'm actually going to give you a third option, Bill, that I think will actually get us there, which is responsible business risk mitigation. Because look, at the end of the day, companies can and should care about the ways in which their third parties and their suppliers present them with a material risk for a whole host of reasons that have nothing to do with the regulatory pressure, right? They're going to be asked by stakeholders. They're going to be asked by suppliers. They're going to be asked by employees. All of those things are reasons to do it that were out in front of the regulatory landscape and will continue to run in front of the regulatory landscape. I mean, look, part of why the SEC came out with their climate disclosure rule is because companies were already disclosing. And it was very challenging. It is very challenging to make sense of the disclosure landscape right now because of the lack of consistency across formats, because of the lack of consistency in what's being disclosed, because of the ways in which the data is being presented. So the faster we can get to the GAAP version, right, of disclosures on these topics, the better from an investor perspective. But, you know, people are already disclosing, and that's part of why there was so much pressure on the SEC to come out with this rule.
So to your point that you just made, we have often discussed how ESG suffers from, you know, a lack of rigorous agreed upon measurements and disclosure standards. So how much impact do you feel that these particular rules in the SEC help to move the needle on that particular aspect?
Yeah. You know, I think there are a few things the SEC included in the rule that are going to be helpful. One of which was the focus on materiality, which I, you know, I referenced the number of times they use the phrase material. I also think the mitigation process piece of it will be impactful, right? So on the one hand, what's the risk? On the other hand, what's the mitigation that you're thinking about for that particular risk? How is it going to be impacting the business? And then importantly, who's responsible, right? How is the board engaged in oversight? How's the management team engaged in oversight of that risk and those mitigation activities? That's information that will be very helpful to investors in evaluating a given organization and the level of riskiness associated with that organization and how comfortable they're going to be putting their money in that particular basket.
Can you walk us through the time horizon that companies have to comply with these rules? And to what degree do companies that already have a robust ESG program have a head start?
Anybody who's already doing this has an enormous head start. Without question, and good for those who had already begun well before, right? Either because of pressure from a regulatory perspective in another jurisdiction like the European Union, where the regs are far ahead of the regs here in the States, or because they're getting pressure from stakeholders to start sharing some of this information, and so they've gotten their act together already. You've got some decent time, probably less than you'd like, probably, you know, litigation is going to impact the time horizons a little bit, but the largest companies ought to get going now because their obligations are going to start showing up next year. Smaller companies have a little bit more of a time horizon, and even the disclosures itself for the larger companies, while they start next year, there's some that come in 26 and 27 and 28, right? So there's a phased in process for some of these disclosures that the SEC has built in that I think will impact the ways in which companies prepare for these disclosure obligations. But, you know, like any regulatory regime, whether it is, you know, some of the Modern Slavery Act disclosures that we've been seeing over the course of the last couple of years, or this rule, you have less time than you think and more time than it looks like would be the way I would describe it.
Yeah. Well, Erica, I have a special bonus at the cast reacts question for you this episode. We don't normally do this, but just as we were putting together this episode, we also saw a new announcement from the DOJ regarding whistleblowers. So in the interest of expediency, while we have you here, what do you make of that?
Yeah, it's a regulatory 1-2 punch, right? We're hearing from everybody. Yeah, for those of you who missed it yesterday, Lisa Monaco gave a speech at the White Collar Conference, which is one of the DOJ's favorite places for making news. So, I always mark in my calendar when it's happening and keep an eye on things. And they announced a couple of things that are of interest to the ethics and compliance profession. First, she summarized some of the wins that the department has had over the course of the last several months. And then she talked a little bit about some of the work the department is doing. And there's two things that she specifically talked about that I want to make sure I highlight for this audience. One is the Department of Justice has taken a look at the whistleblowing programs that exist across the government, whether it's the FinCEN program or IRS programs or the SEC's Dodd-Frank program. And she described it as a patchwork quilt that doesn't quite cover the bed, which is a very evocative image. See where this is going, which is the department has now announced that they will have their own whistleblower program for some of those pieces where there isn't a natural home for the issue that somebody wants to raise. It's a pilot it's a program they're standing up now. So we don't have all the details. We don't know kind of what the monetary structures are going to look like. We don't know what the thresholds are going to look like, but we do know a couple of things. It is specifically targeted at types of misconduct that don't have another obvious government home, right? So that's point number one. It is specifically targeted at information the DOJ doesn't already have. So if it's an active investigation or, you know, the department has come across this information in some other meaningful way, they will not be able to participate in the program. That's very similar to the other government programs that I mentioned. And then it is specifically spoken about in the context of the government's general position on preventing corporate misconduct, right? So it is kind of woven into that fabric of the evaluation of corporate compliance programs and some of those other pieces. So for those of you out there that are thinking about your own speak up cultures, how comfortable people are coming to you with concerns and questions, and the potential impact that you might have seen from some of these other programs, you know, keep an eye on this, and you're going to have to think a lot about how you make sure that the channels that you need to have open to you internally are fully open, functional, and working the way you need them to work, because there will be yet another place offering money in return for information. The second thing that Deputy Attorney General Monaco talked about, though, at the conference is AI. And she specifically called out compliance professionals thinking about how to identify AI risk as part of their compliance programs as something that's going in the ECCP. So if you're not already panicking about what that looks like, start now, right? And start thinking about the ways in which your program is equipped to respond to new and innovative and interesting risks, right? Because that's what the government's asking you to do. She pointed to AI and basically said, look, this is a compliance risk, right? This is the kind of innovative, disruptive technology that we expect your program to be able to address. And when we come in to look at your program, if we need to, it's one of the things we're going to ask, right? So what is your responsible use of AI policy look like? How are you thinking about talking to your people and training on AI risk, right? Those kinds of things need to get into your program now. And you need to start thinking about that as part of your area of responsibility. That's something that she specifically called out in the speech that she gave yesterday. And then one of the members of her team gave a follow-up speech today, talking a little bit about where they are in the development of that whistleblowing program, and you know, some of the questions that they still have to answer as they stand it up over the next 90 days. It's looking to be operational in the fall, but she specifically cited FIPA, which is not the FCPA, but the FEPA, right? The Foreign Extortion Prevention Act. I think I got that acronym right. And it is going after the asker of the bribe, right? So it is specifically looking at the people who are on the, buy side of the transaction, so that it completes the cycle of prosecuting both the people who pay the bribes, as well as now trying to go after the people who asked for them in the first place.
Well, Erica, thank you so much for lending your insight and expertise on these new rules. I'm sure there's going to be a lot more conversation around them in the coming days.
For sure. Absolutely, without question. And Bill, I'm actually going to go from this recording, which we are doing together, to a meeting on how to get all these citations into the sphere so that all of our data is correlated to these new government programs. So for those of you who are looking at Ethisphere's data on a regular basis, stay tuned for those citations to show up very soon.
To read the full text of the Enhancement and Standardization of Climate-Related Disclosures for Investors, visit sec.gov/newsroom and look for their March 6 press release. Or better yet, you can hit the link in this description's show notes. And for a host of resources providing helpful intelligence on the wide array of regulatory issues in today's ethics and compliance environment, please visit ethisphere.com/resources. I'm Bill Coffin, and this has been the Ethicast. For more episodes, please visit the Ethisphere YouTube channel at youtube.com/ethisphere. And if this is your first time enjoying the show, please make sure to like and subscribe either on YouTube or on our podcasting platforms at Apple, Spotify, Google, and Amazon Music. Thanks so much for joining us. And until next time, remember, strong ethics is good business. Ethics doesn't just happen. You need to put in the time. So make sure to register for the 15th Annual Global Ethics Summit, a live and virtual event in Atlanta, Georgia, from April 22nd through the 24th. Save $200 by using the code ETHICAST at registration. To learn more, visit attendges.com.